Lesson number 5. This lesson will deal with the first 12 verses in chapter 3 and may well be termed the perfect man. In chapter 2, the writer was dealing with the value of good works as the evidence of genuine faith. But in this lesson, he stresses the need for control over our words. He introduced the theme in chapter 1 when he spoke about the need to bridle the tongue. But now in chapter 3, he will develop the theme in greater detail. It is a known fact that the tongue can be a good instrument for determining the state of health of the patient. And the Bible also indicates that what is spoken by the tongue will give a good indication of the character of the heart, because out of the abundance of the heart the mouth speaketh. James recognizes the importance of this little member we call the tongue. And it is worthy of note that this treatment which he gives to this subject is placed right in the center of his epistle, which would almost indicate that all the other practical issues of Christianity revolve around this subject. It should be noted at the very outset that James is not calling for a silenced tongue. There are places in the Bible where men were wrong when they kept silent. Zacharias, the father of John the Baptist, was dumb for at least 9 months and was unable to pronounce the priestly blessing upon the people. Certain prophets remained silent when they ought to have spoken out against the prevailing sins of the people. So James quite understands that God gave us our tongues in order to speak. And if one is unable to use the tongue, that is looked upon as an affliction. However, James will maintain that it is a mark of maturity in the outworking of the Christian faith when one learns how to control the tongue. Then we should also note that in chapter 2, he dealt with the man who said he had faith. That is, the man was heard in his speech making a loud profession, but his words were not confirmed by his deeds. Someone might be apt to say, it doesn't make much difference what we say. But James takes another view and says our words are very important. Therefore, in light of this, he emphasizes the need for the control of the tongue. It has been known for a man to have control over a large establishment where a great volume of business was being transacted, and the man was held in high esteem by his employers and also by the employees, until caught in a situation where he lost control of the tongue and gave expression in words most unbecoming for a man in his position. In business circles and in political circles, men often engage in wars with words, and at such times it is customary to do much mudslinging. But sins of speech can also afflict professing Christians, and the Bible warns us against idle words, profane speech, malicious and lying communications. And these things are not to be treated lightly. The writer of the Proverbs had much to say about the talebearer. Therefore, James is giving good scriptural advice in his classic treatment of the tongue. Now, James commences his lesson on the tongue by directing our thoughts to the teacher. And this seems perfectly in order because the words of the teacher will have far-reaching effect. Before anyone would rush in and assume to teach, it would be good to consider what are some of the duties of a teacher, and with what dangers and difficulties he is likely to meet. Teaching in Christian circles is a solemn duty, and no one should assume to discharge such a sacred function unless thoroughly convinced that God has called him to this service and equipped him with the gift. The necessity for this is seen in the record of what was being practiced and allowed in the church at Corinth, where everyone seemed eager to speak in public, and some of them, losing control of their tongues, were speaking in strange languages. And their church gatherings, which should have been for the glory of God and the edifying of the Christians, had deteriorated into a perfect Babel. It could be that James knew of certain believers who were aspiring to be teachers in the church in a kind of light-hearted manner, without considering with sufficient seriousness the tremendous responsibilities involved. Teachers will be judged with special strictness, And this sobering reflection could well solemnize every preacher before he opens his mouth to address his audience. It has been well said that where everybody wants to teach, nobody wants to learn. But the importance of the tongue is certainly manifested when the teacher expresses some sacred eternal truth. And James is not forbidding the use of the tongue, but rather warning us against the abuse of the tongue. The psalmist in Psalm 39 gave expression to these words. I said, I will take heed to my ways, that I sin not with my tongue. I will keep my mouth with a bridle, while the wicked is before me. We do not learn this lesson at one sitting, but it is a lifelong discipline, and the more we learn this truth, then the more perfect or mature we become. If James commenced his lesson on the tongue by directing our attention to the man who speaks publicly as a teacher, it seems obvious that he now opens out into a much wider area of thought. He would have us understand that while he sets before us the perfect goal, that none of us are perfectionists. And even some of God's choice saints have admitted that right here their weaknesses were manifested. Job confessed that he would lay his hand upon his mouth. Isaiah the prophet, in the light of the glory of God, confessed that he was a man of unclean lips. Moses was a meek man, and one of the greatest, and most honorable, yet one day he spake unadvisedly with his lips. James would have us know that in this area we are all guilty, and the only person who was ever perfect in relation to his speech was the Lord Jesus Christ himself, for he never sinned either in thought, word, or deed. James then passes on to give illustrations of the influence of the tongue, and it may be remarked that the influence of the tongue far exceeds its size. He asked us, first of all, to consider the horse and how it is controlled by man. By nature, the horse is strong and wild, and if left alone to its own inclinations, it will simply run wherever it desires, and a runaway horse can be a great danger. But that horse can be brought under control by its master, and this does not happen by accident. The horse must be bridled, and the small bit placed properly in its mouth, and the horse is trained by this means to obey the master. The horse may be strong and powerful, but by means of that little bit in its mouth, its whole body can be turned and its course can be directed. Likewise, if the tongue is allowed to go unbridled, then the man will be uncontrolled and could become a danger to others. During a certain war, people were warned to watch to whom they spoke and what they spoke, because vital information could be slipped in a few words and cause the loss of a ship at sea with all the crew. World leaders have been guilty time and time again of making provocative speeches without due thought to the control of the tongue, and have started wars leading to death and devastation. So James would have us consider that our whole life can be governed for good or ill by the use of that little member called the tongue. Then he directs our attention to the matter of the ship at sea. Now, man never created the horse, but he learned how to control the horse. But when it comes to the question of ships, then here is an area where man learned how to build and display his skill, not only in the building, but how to guide or control the ship. The ship may be large and heavy, but it is controlled by a small rudder. Nevertheless, we should note that the ship has no mind of its own like the horse. But if it was allowed to drift about on the sea, then it would be at the mercy of the winds and the waves. But with the master of the ship at the helm, he is able by means of this small gadget to control the direction of the ship. Let it be remembered that some ships have been guided into the very jaws of destruction, such as the great Titanic. But the issue in our text is that a small rudder can control a large ship. Likewise, we take both these illustrations to emphasize the influence of such a small member as the tongue. and again remind ourselves that its influence appears to be out of all proportion to its size. An umpire makes a decision, and his word has been spoken. He immediately realizes that he has made a mistake, and the reaction of the players and spectators confirm this. But he has spoken, and will not withdraw or reverse his decision. And the final result was completely decided because one man made an error with his tongue. As the lesson continues, we are directed to the thought of a little spark starting a fire, and that fire destroying a whole forest of trees. Now, it should be obvious to each one that a forest cannot grow in a day, but is the result of years of rain and sunshine, when the young saplings grew and ultimately became strong trees, some of them ready to provide timber for the benefit of mankind, when some thoughtless person dropped a little spark or a little fire, and soon the whole thing was out of control and a mighty forest completely destroyed. So that little member called the tongue can be sparked into a flame from hell. When some slanderous word is spoken, and someone's character is maligned, or someone's actions are misrepresented, and that person is ruined and destroyed, just because a little tongue was uncontrolled. It seems almost impossible to exaggerate the influence of the tongue, because great multitudes can be swayed either for good or ill by the use of the tongue. And just as fire can be extremely destructive, so can the tongue when it is out of control. But not only does James expose the influence of the tongue for evil, but he sets forth the inconsistencies of the tongue. He says it is an unruly evil full of deadly poison. With the tongue men will bless God and use that same tongue to curse men. Blessing and cursing coming out of the same mouth ought not to be. Think of Miriam, the sister of Moses. And you will remember that she led the chorus of women in Exodus chapter 15 when they praised the Lord for his wonderful triumph over their enemies and their deliverance from Egypt. But it was that same Miriam who spoke against Moses, her brother, and she was stricken with leprosy and held up the camp for a whole week, and she failed to enter the promised land. There are things which are definitely incongruous and out of harmony with the nature of things. If man has learned how to control wild animals, why hasn't he learned how to control his own tongue? Take nature now for an example. Did you ever find a well that would give bitter water and pure water at the same time? Then why should the tongue be used to bless God and then curse men? A man was an elder in a certain local church. The particular denomination I will not mention. But one Monday morning at his work, where he was a foreman, he began to use unbecoming language to one of the workers. The young man immediately challenged and reprimanded him and pointed out, as a professing religious man, it was beneath his dignity to take part in his church activity on the Sunday and use such language on the Monday. James would have us produce only that language which is becoming, that which is pure and honorable, fruit that is comparable to the true faith. Let there never be any inconsistency with the tongue of the professing Christian. Amen.